The headline of the July-August issue of Mother Jones Magazine reads, "Totally wasted. We've blown $300 billion. Death squads roam Mexico. Cartels operate in 259 U.S. cities. This is your war on drugs. Any questions?" Well, today we'll talk about that feature and take a snapshot of America's war on drugs from the story of a Mexican reporter seeking asylum in the U.S. after finding himself on the wrong side of the Mexican army in his reporting. And we'll also get some perspective on where we've been and where we are now in terms of America's policy on narcotics. Good morning. I'm Veronica Rickard. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll have a couple of guests this morning from the magazine, and the first we'll talk with is Charles Bowden. He is a contributing writer to Mother Jones Magazine. He's also contributed to GQ and National Geographic. And his piece in the Mother Jones issue is called "We Bring Fear." And Charles Bowden, thank you so much for being with us. I think we're having some trouble with the phone. I guess we've lost our guest there. We'll try to get him back in just a second. And let me tell you about the second guest we'll have on. He is Sam Baldwin, and he has also contributed to that same Mother Jones issue on drugs in America. And his timeline, he's done a history of the America's relationship with drugs, going all the way back to the 1800s. It looks at the formation of the DEA, the creation of the Drug Czar. What happens when we think about legalizing drugs? All of that is in there and kind of gives you a good sense of where you are. And we'll talk with him the second half of this hour. Right now, let's see if we've got Charles Bowden back. Charles, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Great.
Alive and well.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, I want to talk about this big Mother Jones issue that you have contributed to. Why do you think this is the right time to start thinking about this issue right now, drugs and the war on drugs in America?
About 40 years ago, that we've squandered two generations creating giant prisons, outlawing personal consumption, and spent hundreds of billions of dollars and slaughtered tens of thousands of people. So this isn't premature, it's late.
There's something now, though, with the escalating violence in Mexico, the splitting of the cartels. Do you think it's just sort of beginning to hit American consciousness?
Well, yes and no. You know, I think a lot of Americans have known the war on drugs was a kind of clinical idiocy. But what's happening in Mexico is more than a war on drugs. Mexico's breaking down. I don't want to get into whether it's a failed state because I don't know what that is. But since December of 2006, 12,000 Mexicans have been slaughtered in an initiative by the Mexican government to fight what it calls drug cartels. At the same time, the Mexican army has lost 72 people, which is a very strange war. What we're seeing under the guise of a war against drugs is a struggle for power and money. It's essentially within Mexico, a war for drugs. That's where the money is. The Mexican economy shrank 6% last year. This is a society where 50% of the population earns $5 a day or less. It's in crisis economically. Drugs are in Mexico anywhere from $30 to $50 billion a year. Twice the amount that remittances get it, which is its recognized second largest source of foreign currency, the largest source being oil. And so this whole thing is actually a model of what's going on in the world. Mexico was supposed to be the poster child for the global economy because of NAFTA when it passed in 1994. What is created is both economic ruin and mass flight. The migration north to places like Wisconsin is the largest human migration going on Earth. NAFTA was supposed to stop that. It accelerated it. That's kind of what we're looking at. The war on drugs domestically, as I said, is a form of idiocy for domestic political reasons. There's an excellent book on the policy, Dan Baum, Smoke and Mirrors, which shows that essentially every drug initiative, starting with Richard Nixon, was because some president discovered they were down in the polls and decided to get tough on drugs. It has nothing to do with either drug consumption or anything else, which, frankly, has never been much of a menace in our society. And most of the people I know seem to show up on time for work and do their job.
Well, your article in Mother Jones focuses on a reporter, Emilio Gutierrez Soto, and his story, which his lawyer is seizing on maybe as the iconic story that will really make the point about what reporters are up against in Mexico and just what is really going on there. Tell us, I know it's a beautifully written, really compelling article telling his story. Can you give us maybe the shortened version of it? What's going on?
Yeah, I'll give you the very short version. Emilio Gutierrez is in the United States seeking political asylum because he wrote a very short story in the newspaper in Chihuahua about the Mexican army. And since that day, the Mexican army has been trying to kill him. That's it. The same Mexican army we're giving $500 million a year to under the Plan Morita as part of what we call our war against drugs. No Mexican reporter has ever gotten political asylum from the United States because that would recognize that Mexico is not truly a democracy, does not respect human rights. So Emilio Gutierrez stands for thousands. If he wins this case, and I hope he will, it could open a floodgate of people fleeing terror in Mexico, and that is what's going on. Mexico is the second most dangerous place on earth to be a reporter. In Ciudad Juarez, the city facing El Paso, so far this year, 1,150 people have been slaughtered. That's 40% ahead of last year. It's one of the most violent cities on earth. Emilio stands for what's going on, and what he stands for is being denied in the U.S. press. And the U.S. press is explained as a cartel war. I'd like to make one last point.
Sure.
Miles. The cartels have been there for decades. The most violent year in the history of war as a center of cartel activity was 2007. 301 people were executed. Since this initiative by the Mexican government started, this murder rate has exploded. Last year, 1,607. This year, already 1,150, 40% ahead of last year. This cartel war language used by the U.S. press, in my opinion, explains nothing. It doesn't explain why there's been an explosion of slaughter all over Mexico. Yes, 2 days ago in Veracruz, a police commander and his four children and wife were executed. 2 days ago in Acapulco, a prominent radio reporter was found slaughtered, buried in the law.
This is like the point you make in your article, that there are two Mexicos and one of them doesn't exist. One is the country that cooperates with the United States, has a good faith effort, has laws and politics that are observed and observable by others outside. And then there's, you say that one doesn't really exist. What exists is the second Mexico, in which the army, the political structure is all complicit in part of the drug trade.
The drug industry is also. Look, they're all in bed together in the end. That's where the money is. I'll give you another statistic. The major source of foreign currency for Mexico is oil, Pemex. It's 40% of the Mexican government's budget. By the statements of the president of Mexico and all his officials, there won't be any oil in 9 years. The fields are collapsing. So this little war for drugs that's going on is a war for drugs, not against drugs. We're wading in for our own domestic political reasons. All American politicians have to be against drugs. It's the same reason we built the wall. We have to be for homeland security.
So are you of the opinion that legalizing drugs would take care of the problem?
No, nothing takes care of the problem. You know, in the end, we all die, as they say. I am saying legalizing drugs creates a problem that's minuscule compared to outlawing them. I am saying Americans have used alcohol, tobacco, and anything else they could get their paws on since we started the republic. I am saying, as your listeners well know, George Washington grew marijuana. I'm saying that we are taking what is at most a public health issue, people consuming things we think are bad for them, like McDonald's burgers, and we've made it a police issue. And this hasn't worked. Patently. We're spending $40 billion a year just paying narcotics officers. We have the highest prison rate in the world, primarily because of drugs. And then we should stop this. I want to live in a world where people don't carry guns, don't drink white wine, and don't get stoned all the time. But the world I want will not be solved by outlawing these things. It will be solved through education.
Well, I want to talk about something you mentioned a little while ago, the Merida Initiative. Tell us what that is and how you see that playing out south of the border.
It started under President Bush. It was the idea that we would support the initiative of the Mexican government, which started in December 2006, to fight the domestic illicit drug industry. And we would give them $500 million a year to fortify their army. And the premise was that the army was the most sterling, non-corrupt element in Mexico. All of this was idiocy. Anybody that knows Mexico knows the army has been in the dope business a long time. And so what we're doing is giving $500 million a year to the largest criminal organization in Mexico, the army. If you think I'm kidding, by our own U.S. Army studies, in the last 6 years, out of a Mexican army of 250,000 soldiers, 100,000 to 150,000 have gone over the wall with their guns and joined the cartels. This is a futile policy. But it is a way domestically for both former President Bush and the current President Obama to claim they're doing something about drugs. But on the ground, the only reality it has is the army comes to kill honest reporters like Emilio Gutierrez, and he has to flee with his 15-year-old son to the United States to stay alive.
Do you see that changing as we face the problems of illegal immigration and people fleeing Mexico because the economy has collapsed, because of the drug trade, and as you said, Mexico's collapsing oil fields? Is this something that's going to have to be looked at with new lenses? Thanks to the situations on the ground.
Actually, has to take his head out of the sand. But I don't see anybody looking at it in the immediate future. The statements of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton are typical, blaming Americans for drug consumption, denouncing the fact that you can buy a gun legally in the United States, and endorsing Plan Merida. All of these are, you know, a kind of delusional thinking. And frankly, given the meltdown of the U.S. economy and the effort to get health care here, I don't see this administration or this Congress squarely facing Mexico either on illegal immigration or the drug issue anytime soon, because there's no domestic political payoff for them.
Well, if Mexico does become a failed state, you're not willing to say whether or not it is, but if it does, they're our next-door neighbor, and I would think that what starts in your house comes over to my house.
Oh, that's true. Look at it. I mean, we can't ignore Mexico forever. There's 100 million people there. We share a 2,000-mile border. I've spent my entire life on the border. It'll come back and bite us if we don't do something. I'm simply saying, given current political reality, it will continue to be ignored. Eventually, we'll have to face it, because we can't have a failed state sharing a 2,000-mile border. We have to do something, and the one thing we have to do will be very hard. The only way you'll stop the migration of the poor out of Mexico is give them a livelihood where they live, which means we will have to spend money.
Well, let's leave it there for the moment, and then I want to come back and start taking phone calls on the issue and your article. As we talk about Mother Jones' big feature issue, it's about the war on drugs, a failed war on drugs, as we're hearing from our guest this morning, who contributed the article We Bring Fear to the magazine. He's also a contributing writer to GQ and National Geographic, and his article is running right now in the July-August issue of Mother Jones magazine. And we welcome your calls, too. Tell us if you think America's war on drugs is still floundering and what we should do to make a difference. Do you agree with our guests that it's time to decriminalize narcotics to help staunch the bleeding in Mexico that's coming over to the United States? Well, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send us your email at talk@WPR.org. I'm Veronica Rickert with you on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up today at 1 o'clock on Wisconsin Public Radio, join us for Talk of the Nation. Not everyone who needs an organ transplant waits in line. After 1 o'clock on Talk of the Nation, hear about the New Jersey probe into the alleged sale of human kidneys. That's coming up on 1 o'clock's Talk of the Nation. I'm Veronica Rickert with you this morning for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're talking about the feature in Mother Jones Magazine currently running called Totally Wasted, just who is winning the war on drugs. Talking with Charles Bowden, a contributing writer to that feature. He has contributed the article We Bring Fear about the reporter Emilio Gutierrez Soto, who is seeking political asylum in the United States, having run afoul of the Mexican army. How exactly this shines a light on what is going on in the war on drugs and relations between America and Mexico. And we'll go to the phones right now. We've got Carl waiting to talk from Peshtigo. Hi, Carl.
Hello, Veronica and your guest. Well, as it's biting us in the rear end, we'll use Phoenix, Arizona for an example, for a possibility. And the war on drug is just a sham for money, big money, as he said. And as far as drug addicts and so forth, I've come to the conclusion more is better, most is best. As soon as we get rid of the parasite that creates the problem of themselves, this country will probably be better off. In regards to their future drug addicts, education out there has been in schools, just like for cigarettes and alcohol. They make the choice for the culture they want to live. And as regards to the drug issue, I think it's bit us in Wisconsin. It's fine family that lost their son in their holdup in regards to possibly drug and gang activities and so forth. What is it that we need to understand that we're not being understood of?
Thank you, Carl. Charles Bowden?
Well, I didn't think that was a question, but I understand his anger.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anyone listening here that's had much of a life who hasn't known someone who's been lost to drugs. I've buried friends who killed themselves with drugs. So when I say legalize, it's not because I think drugs are wonderful. It's because I think using our police powers to control them are worse than the problem itself.
Play it out for us. What happens if we legalize drugs? Does that mean that the suppliers in Mexico will have to be more above board and be accountable? Does that mean that we'll have... What happens?
Well, what happens are two things. Drug use will increase. We know that from ending prohibition with alcohol. Two, there will be a burst of violence when it ends because tens or hundreds of thousands of people who have been engaged in criminal activity making money selling drugs will now face a loss of income, and we'll get a spurt like we did in the 30s of John Dillinger's. Mexico itself will collapse. It's totally dependent on drug money. It will have to reconstitute what it calls its economy. Now, if you think these things are not, you know, that we shouldn't legalize drugs because these things shouldn't happen, you don't want them to happen, that's fine. Then you continue down this path. The other thing your listeners should know, the drugs are infinitely cheaper now than they were when we started the drug war. The quality is much higher than it was 40 years ago, and they're far more available. That's what we've accomplished. I did a book where we did a heroin deal in Dallas. And in Dallas in the early 1980s, heroin was $230, $250 a kilo. And I was buying at 94% pure from Colombians for $72,000 a kilo, and that's not counting constant dollars. If we keep this war going long enough, dope will be free the way it's been going.
Why does the Mexican economy collapse if we legalize drugs? Because we still need suppliers. We don't necessarily have the same climate to support drug growth as they do in Mexico.
They're a major source of cocaine, and they don't produce any. They just transport it. 50% of the marijuana now is grown in the United States anyway.
Okay.
100%. So that leaves heroin. I guess they could get in the heroin industry, which you have to understand when you get into this, is all of these products are cheap to produce. The federal government did a study in the 1970s, for example, on marijuana, two studies. One study found that if marijuana were legalized, it would cost the same as watermelon. The other study found it would cost the same as lettuce. Cocaine also is dirt cheap. There's legal cocaine in this country for ocular disorders produced by one pharmaceutical company in New Jersey, and it's $3 or $4 a gram, and they're making a profit. So I'm simply saying there won't be any money in this if you legalize it, except taxation like we have with whiskey, beer, wine, tobacco.
Let's take another phone call before we have to let you go. Sure. Dean in Appleton here. Hi, Dean.
Hi. How are you doing?
Doing well. How about you?
I'm calling because I totally agree with the professor.
Don't call me that. You hurt my feelings. Just a human being.
Well, I'm sorry, sir. But anyhow, I agree. I am for what I say is pro-choice. It's not about the abortion issue. It's about a personal issue on whether you agree with civil liberties or not. And that is that if I want to use drugs and they basically affect me, of course they affect relationships around us, but it's a personal choice. So if your personal choice is that you are for abortion, then that is your personal choice, and you have that civil liberty in my mind. And I should have be afforded that same pro-choice stance. Now, with the regards to drugs, I did my college term paper on the legalization of drugs from the standpoint that more people in world history have died in the search for the legalization of mind-altering substances than for any other cause in world history, through the Chinese Opium Wars, through our government's involvement in the Golden Triangle and this whole perpetuation of heroin through the Iran-Contra. I don't want to get into all that, but I agree with the professor. And as far as Carl earlier, I mean, I feel for that man, but excuse me. But we have to realize that most of the violence that is associated with drug use is because of the criminal element. And as this man has so appropriately pointed out, that once you take the criminal element out by lowering the value of these drugs, more things will become like indigenous within communities, and it will become more like it was in the 60s, which I don't condone those actions, but it was a more peaceful, like, spiritual thing. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, Dean. Do you agree with him, Charles Bowden? Do you think that the problem is the criminal aspect, and once we get rid of that, half the problem solved?
Well, you certainly get rid of the violence. I mean, look, there's 500 street gangs in Juarez killing each other just over drug turf. The same thing's happening in lots of American cities. The only thing I would add to his comments is as we legalize drugs, we'll go through the same thing we went through with alcohol. We'll have to establish norms of behavior, meaning you can be drunk in our society now, but you're scorned by others if you're drunk all the time. The same thing will happen with drugs. There is this final point that people worry if you can tell somebody's on drugs. Well, if you can't tell, why would you care? As long as they can perform their duties, once again, it's none of our business. As I said earlier, if you had a world where nobody used any drugs, just went out and worked hard and was nice to everybody, I'd prefer that. But we live in a world where people crave drugs. A lot of them get them from their doctors to alter their state of being. So why should we have a class war against those who go to the street? That's it.
Well, and as Mother Jones reported in their sort of snapshot of America with drugs, after Prohibition, it seemed as though alcohol use actually fell off.
That's highly debated, you know.
You don't think so?
Actually, no, I don't. But frankly, anybody that goes to New Orleans where they have 24-hour saloons knows that the more alcohol is available, the more it's consumed. I just spent 5 weeks there this spring. But the point is that legalizing alcohol created far fewer problems than having it outlawed. Al Capone and these figures suddenly vanished. That's what matters. So we're giving, what you should consider is we're giving $30 to $50 billion a year to a criminal class in Mexico that's murderous because of these drug laws. We are financing almost psychopaths.
Well, let's get one more call in here. Richard from Kenosha. Hi, Richard.
Hello, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Good. I just wanted to ask your guest, we are giving billions of dollars to Colombia and to Mexico, other South American countries for this drug war, but yet we permit Afghanistan to produce black tar heroin, and just in the past month where we actually stand up to them, they kidnapped one of our soldiers when we destroyed some of their chemical storage facilities. How can they let this go on when we have military control of that country?
Well, one, I don't think we have military control, but two, if you look at the history of what's called the war on drugs, foreign policy always trumps our drug policy. The State Department and the CIA always have more clout, say, than DEA. And so this pattern you're citing, which I don't disagree with, that's the pattern, is normal. In the end, if the only way, for example, we can sustain Afghanistan is to let them grow poppies, we tend to do that. Just like we have turned a blind eye, we did for decades in Southeast Asia, to the Golden Triangle, because we wanted to sustain, Chinese generals who had fled there, warlords. I don't know any way around that until we change who we are.
Well, thank you for that call, Richard, and we need to take a quick break right now. And thank you to Charles Bowden. I don't know if you're able to stay on with us for the whole hour.
I'll turn it over to Sam now.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Okay, thank you. Charles Bowden, contributing writer to GQ and National Geographic, and he also wrote the article We Bring Fear, which is running currently in Mother Jones' big feature on the war on drugs. It's called Totally Wasted, just who is winning the war on drugs, running right now in the July-August issue. And we welcome your calls this morning as well. Tell us if you think America's war on drugs is, why you think it's floundering, if you think it's floundering, and what we need to do about it. Are we throwing good money away, and what's the result? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, and our email is talk@WPR.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, glad to be with you this morning here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Still to come today on Wisconsin Public Radio, at 11 o'clock, Larry Mueller looks at the future of electricity from renewable sources. His guest is Larry Pape with the National Academy of Engineering. And at 11:45, Larry goes underground. His guests talk about caves in Wisconsin. I'm Veronica Rickert, glad to be with you this morning on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm in this week for Kathleen Dunn as we talk about the Mother Jones feature, Totally Wasted, just who is winning the war on drugs. Just got done talking with Charles Bowden, who wrote the article We Bring Fear for the issue. And we'll move on now to our second guest, Sam Baldwin, also a contributing writer to the feature in Mother Jones. He was the lead researcher on the We Bring Fear piece in Mother Jones magazine. He's also their online fellow and a contributing writer and co-author of the segment in the magazine Timeline of America with Drugs and the Altered States of America. Sam Baldwin, thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, thanks, Veronica.
So I asked Charles Bowden this question. I want to ask you, why right now for this issue from Mother Jones? Why is it becoming something that's in the consciousness?
It seems like the right cultural moment. We've got the drug czar saying he wants to banish the term war on drugs. Marijuana, at least, is, I think, more culturally acceptable now than it's been in 30 years. And, generally with the new administration, it seems like things might change.
What do you see changing?
Well, to be honest, I don't see a whole lot changing soon. Kevin Drum, our great blogger at Mother Jones, wrote a piece on marijuana legalization for the issue. It's called The Patriot's Guide to Legalization. And even he took kind of a rosy view, didn't think that anything could change for about 10 years with regards to the prohibition of marijuana.
And you've written The Altered States of America. It sort of encapsulates America's long, strange history with drugs. Can you tell us, you wrote that piece. What came out of that to you? What was the clear message about America's sort of schizophrenic relationship with drugs?
Well, I assembled the piece with Daniel Luzer, another one of the research fellows here, at the behest of the editor, Clara Jeffrey. And she had kind of asked us to develop a timeline that kind of exposed the absurdity of our relationship with drug prohibition. And so it's not a kind of moment-by-moment timeline. We're not chronicling every little change in law. We're trying to show kind of how absurd and ridiculous the whole thing has been.
Well, our thinking has been back and forth on it from prohibition, and then later on, if you flash forward to either it was the Nixon or the Carter administration, there were studies funded that said we should legalize drugs. It didn't seem to constitute any genuine danger to society, and then that advice was promptly ignored.
Yeah, I mean, Nixon straight up ordered this thing, a presidential commission, the Schaefer Commission, to study the kind of safety and make recommendations on the legality of marijuana. And the commission was done by smart, objective people, and they said what any smart, objective person would say about marijuana, that it's not a huge danger and that the danger is in the culture of prohibition and the law enforcement and the illegality aspect. But that did not jive with Nixon's worldview. And he totally ignored the report despite, you know, commissioning it himself.
As has every politician since Nixon.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Well, for some time, and this may be changing, there's been, I guess, too big of a perceived political cost. You know, the law and order crowd has held a lot of sway, or at least perceived sway, in elections. And this is actually a really interesting thing that I blogged about on Mother Jones a couple weeks ago, is that it actually isn't the ideological right which makes it politically costly to support kind of a liberalization of our drug laws. You know, William Buckley, kind of a lot of luminaries on the right, have been for the like total legalization and of all drugs for, you know, on record for 40 years. And so it's not from the right or the left, because obviously you always assume the left is for a more liberal drug policy, that the political mm-hmm. cost comes from. It's from the sense of order, law and order, or the everyman who is uncomfortable with changing these laws. But
does that make it a moral issue?
I think it is a moral issue, but also I think it's a moral issue because of the law enforcement, the misappropriation of law enforcement, and the way that the drug wars ruined so many people's lives. But on the politically, it's a political issue. So
let's go back to the phones right now. We've got Nathaniel from Menominee on the line. Hi, Nathaniel.
Hello, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Oh, just dandy. I just wanted to make a comment quick. I'm not exactly against, but I'm not exactly for the legalization of drugs. And I just wanted to ask you, you know, when prohibition was in effect and then, you know, we got rid of prohibition, you know, everybody knew that, you know, all of a sudden everybody went and partied and got wasted and stuff like that. But now that we have, you know, laws set to where, you know, you have to be 21 to drink and stuff like that, even though those laws are in place, people who are younger do those simply because it is illegal, you know. And if we add, like, you know, laws or restrictions to, you know, marijuana or cocaine or something like this, so you have to be a certain age and you can't drive while under the influence, what's going to happen to those kids who then are doing it underage because it's illegal, because it's that they're doing it, you know, just because the same reason, you know, they want to go drink. The only problem is if you drink and you overdose, you get wasted. If you overdose on drugs, you die.
Yeah, it's a good question. What do you think, Sam Baldwin?
Well, I wouldn't quite agree with the fact that if you overdose on drugs, you die. If you alcohol is as dangerous a drug as any. If you overdose on alcohol, you also die. I don't think anyone's dying from marijuana. You know, there are well-documented cases of people ODing on cocaine. So I'd say cocaine and alcohol are extremely dangerous. But also, you know, so a policy of liberalization of drug laws doesn't mean that we just say, oh, sure, here's drugs, they're legal. I mean, it comes with a reallocation of resources. Right now, we are pouring billions and billions of dollars into strict, into this drug war and into law enforcement that's ultimately futile. If we redirect that funding towards reducing demand and treatment programs and education, drug education, you know, this is long-term, and it's been proven all around the world. This is what they've done in Portugal. It's what they've done in other parts of Europe. That this is how you solve a drug problem. People are going to always want to do drugs of all sorts, and strictly prohibiting it and criminalizing it it's just been proven that it's not an effective way to further the health of society.
Well, and you write in your timeline that the program DARE to keep kids off drugs, which is in tons of schools or has been,
right,
is pretty ineffective. Why was that? If what you're talking about is education as being the thing that works.
Well, why is DARE ineffective? You know, no one really knows. And actually, President Obama recently, I don't know, he did something commemorating DARE, saying it was an important piece of whatever approach we should have nationally. Yeah, I'm right. There's a study that came out that said of the 80% of U.S. school districts had DARE programs in 2003, and the GAO did a report that found students who received DARE training, or whatever you call it, DARE education, actually in some cases are more likely to do drugs. So, you know, DARE isn't the right model. DARE is based on a, you know, kind of an abstinence model. So it's, in any case, the big problem with drugs isn't kids. It's addicts and chronic users. And the only way to, and getting rid of that problem will reduce demand, and that will help the war in Mexico and everything else. And so that problem is something that treatment is going to be the big initiative we need to spearhead in the future.
Well, it seems as though we have to take a look in the mirror, though, and decide just exactly what our values are when it comes to drugs. Nathaniel did make up the point, I mean, whether or not you agree that if you overdose on drugs, you die or not. There is a qualitative difference between hard drugs and soft drugs, really, some people would
say. Sure.
And we have to decide what we want to teach our children about that. I mean, I don't know if we know the answer to that right now.
Well, I think we can all agree that marijuana is not a hard drug. That alcohol is a harder drug than it. And the beginning of any sensible drug policy starts with the decriminalization of marijuana.
Okay, let's go back to the phones right now, see if we get some other listeners in on that. We've got Joe in Lac des Flambeaux. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Well, I'm on the same page with your guests as far as legalization and decriminalization, but and I think, as the guest in your last half hour pointed out, that you're going to see a definite surge in problems associated with it. But I think that will be taken care of in the long run. But I think what really has to be dealt with ahead of legalization and or decriminalization is the issue of glamorization. And what I'm speaking of specifically is advertising.
Right.
This idea that if drugs are legalized or decriminalized, that they be handled in the same way that alcohol or tobacco is nowadays, I think is really a bad way to go. And yet, with the First Amendment being de facto extended to businesses in this country, I think there's going to be a big political wrangle over this, and I think that needs to be addressed. But to me, that is the critical issue, because without the advertising and the glamorization, I think it's very feasible to keep problems related to the use of drugs at a manageable level.
Great point, Joe. Thank you for that call. And Sam Baldwin, what about advertising? Does that figure into this? Do you think it would ever be legal, then, if we legalize drugs? Do we legalize advertising of drugs, commercials?
Joe made a great point. And glamorization of drugs is, you know, it's a problem right now, and we don't even have legalized drugs. So there you go. It's definitely a problem. Any decriminalization, legalization policy that I would advocate for would still make it illegal for, or still prohibit kind of large-scale, you know, marijuana corporations. You know, we don't want an Anheuser-Busch of marijuana. We just don't. We don't want a Marlboro of marijuana. Lots of legalization policies have asked for a grow-your-own policy. So much in the way that medicinal marijuana works in, I know, Oregon and Northern California and other states, where the source is people growing in their backyards. People, you know, I have a friend whose aunt is on chemo, and he grows a marijuana plant in his backyard. Growing your own gets rid of corporate motives, which can be really dangerous whenever we're talking about, you know, potentially deadly substances such as alcohol. And then, so let's say that doesn't happen, and we don't get a grow-your-own clause, and whatever decriminalization, legalization initiatives eventually come forth, then we need to look at tobacco and the tobacco advertising model, how it's been regulated over the years, and you don't see cigarette ads on TV, and how effective that's really been. I mean, America has the lowest rate of smokers of any kind of big industrialized developed country in the world.
And do you attribute that to the fact that we've cracked down on advertising?
It's about cracking down on advertising. It's about just a much larger public health campaign. It's about, to steal the word from the war on drugs, it's about a social denormalization of smoking cigarettes that we have here and that they don't have in Europe and in China, where they smoke way more than us.
That's really interesting, because you think if you apply that to cigarettes, how many other things that are maybe borderline in terms of whether or not they're bad for you, could we make huge changes societally by just looking at the advertising?
Yeah, I mean, advertising is one of many factors. But yes, tobacco has been, like, you know, when my mom and dad were growing up, every room was full of smoke, and the TV was full of ads for Marlboro Man, and so was, you know, before movies and the pages of every magazine. And now that's different, and people of my generation do not smoke as many cigarettes. And it's, you know, it's a wonderful thing.
Back to the phone lines now. Let's take a call of Bob from Milwaukee. Hi, Bob.
How are you today?
Not bad, and you?
I can't complain. I've been listening to your commentators on there. Now, I'm a product of the late 60s, early 70s. And, of course, the pot we were smoking then was different than it was today. Of course, LSD was more prevalent, and it was more of an experimental drug then. But since then, we've all grown up. And some of us probably didn't grow up. And, I mean, you know, we all have children and grandchildren now. And we're looking at the aspect of it that, you know, we love our children, and we made mistakes in the past that we don't want our children to make. I've seen people rolling around the ground from an addiction. And it went from heroin to where they were rolling around on the ground because they were trying to get off of methadone, which was worse. Number two, and I don't consider marijuana a drug, so to speak, although it is. If you were to legalize marijuana, put a tax on it like you would alcohol, you also should also incorporate in this tax, like a tax for clinics and stuff like that for users. You know what I mean? Some of this money should go to that, not only for marijuana users, but you know, for the other drugs that come with that. Now, the other aspect of it, too, is I am very against cocaine and heroin, et cetera. I mean, I've been on both sides of this issue. I mean, I used to, you know, pick up a little bit for me and my friends or whatever, and we'd split the cost or whatever, and I got in trouble a couple of times for doing that. But I still think marijuana could be legalized, taxed, and it could be a beneficial drug to many people, you know, and... And that's the way I look at it. Now, I have a very open and frank discussion with my daughter, who is 19, and she's going through the experimental phases of this stuff. I've also seen where some of my friends got into trouble and ended up leaving their kids at home because they had such a drug problem that they had to go find something, leave their kids alone, and eventually she was incarcerated for it.
I like Bob's points there about including money for education along with any legalization sort of effort. Do you think that would be part of the parcel if it ever happened?
Totally. I mean, no one's saying drugs aren't a destructive force to society. I mean, they are. Like, you know, going up the pyramid, they just get more and more destructive. It doesn't mean that what we're doing right now with a strict prohibition is the most effective way to serve our society. If we shift to a treatment model, and I think that's what I hear Bob saying, a treatment model that includes, yes, more funding for expanded program for addicts and for drug education, we're going to ultimately solve, I mean, we're going to, this is, drugs are going to wreak a lot less havoc on society.
It's interesting because this is not a win-win scenario where it seems like every aspect is rosy. It seems as though we have to choose the lesser of two evils.
Totally. Well, I would encourage people to check out a book Glenn Greenwald, the blogger at Salon, has recently put out. And it's through the Cato Institute, which you wouldn't usually associate with someone as liberal as Glenn. But it's about this experiment they've done in Portugal where they have legalized marijuana and totally decriminalized a lot of other drugs. And it's been going on for about 5 years now. And, like, every measurable metric of drugs' effects on society, whether it's a number of emergency room visits or the number of people in addiction programs or, you know, whatever metric you've got has, like, been halved by this program. It's just a miracle going on in Portugal right now. And obviously we're a really different country than Portugal. We're much larger, much more diverse, much more entrenched drug culture in a lot of ways. We should look and see what's going on there, because this is a model that's working right now in a sea of ones that aren't.
Do you think, then, the legalization model is something that might be a lot closer to win-win than we think?
Yeah, well, in California, there's certainly... When I hear you say win-win, I'm thinking also about tax revenue. Tom Amiano, the assemblyman in California, has a bill out right now, which is sadly lacking co-sponsorship, in the California House. And, yeah, that would propose exactly this, legalize and tax marijuana, because we have such a horrible budget problem out here. They're grasping at straws to raise money. And so I think it could be sold as a win-win. We're going to do better on our... We're going to serve our society better with this drug problem, and we're also going to raise money towards this horrible deficit. But when you're talking about drugs, you're talking about a least bad scenario. So maybe it can be sold politically as win-win.
Well, what kind of response have you gotten from this feature in Mother Jones? It's pretty controversial, I would think. What are people saying?
You know, it's actually been not controversial at all. It's been overwhelmingly positive. Reason magazine, which is kind of a Mother Jones of the right, wrote us up commending us. They pretty much agreed with everything. They thought we didn't take some of our legalization arguments far enough. It's really been non-controversial, which that's part of what I was saying at the beginning. There is a cultural shift going on right now. In the editor's note from Monica Barline and Claire Jeffrey, the co-editors-in-chief, they note that there's been this idea has been floating around for a Mojo issue for literally 40 years, but because of the fear of, you know, and I quote, looking like a bunch of hot-tubbing stoners, because we are a magazine of the left, we've stayed away from it. But, you know, we finally took the plunge, 2009, and it's really been well-received.
I think we have time for one more phone call here. Ashley from Bayview. Hi, Ashley.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm kind of honored to speak to both of the guests. I just wanted to say that during the recent press conference with President Obama, he was asked about legalization, and he kind of laughed it off. It was an internet poll, as did the audience. So how can we ensure that this issue is going to be taken more seriously? Myself and friends of mine that are all professionals in the community have felt this way for a long time. How can we have a conversation regarding decriminalization and legalization that's a legitimate conversation?
That's a good question. Thank you, Ashley. Sam Baldwin?
You're totally right, Ashley, that Obama is not on board with this. It's, you know, Axelrod and him have thought about every possible political angle to every possible, you know, issue, and it's not worth it for him to even talk about legalization. It's too much of a distraction, and he's doing some really, really important things right now, healthcare, wars, et cetera, bailout, everybody knows that. And so it's not going to come up in terms of national politics anytime soon. The place where it can come up and where I encourage people to have a conversation is in the states. You know, a bunch of states have de facto legalization, have decriminalization, have medicinal marijuana. This is where the conversation starts. Call up your local representative. That's where you're going to get something done. And also, we are in the media trying to start the conversation. We just put out this whole package on the drug wars, Foreign Policy Magazine, The Economist, Reason, like I mentioned earlier. I think the media is trying to pick up on the larger cultural moment, and we're going to further the conversation best we can.
Well, Sam Baldwin, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it, and there's lots of great stuff in the Mother Jones issue just to cover. You've covered some of it today, and we've covered some with Charles Bowden, but a lot there to really sink your teeth into and think about. So thank you so much for your time and for sharing these thoughts with us today.
Great. Thanks, Veronica.
We've been talking this half hour with Sam Baldwin, who is a contributing writer to the feature Totally Wasted, Just Who is Winning the War on Drugs, which is currently running in the July-August issue of Mother Jones Magazine. And before that, we talked with the author of We Bring Fear, also a contributing writer to the feature, and that was Charles Bowden, who's also contributed to GQ and National Geographic magazine. So thank you to both our guests this morning. And also thank you to Brittany DeAnda, who answered your phone calls this morning, and to Rhonda Fanning and Rob Schroeder for production help as well. If you'd like a copy of any of the programs this morning, you can always call up the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. That's 1-800-747-7444. And this hour we just did on the War on Drugs is program 730E. And if you've got some time, you want to see what we've been doing in the past or drop us some suggestions, you can go to our website. It's WPR.org. Well, thank you for listening. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.